Welcome to episode 121 of the Sports Geek Podcast. This week I chat with Core Software's Adam Groh on his career at the Utah Jazz and CRM strategies that you need to get started.
Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals.
And now, here's your host, who's ready to step up and replace Vin Scully, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, I don't know if I am quite ready to replace a legend like Vin Scully, but I thought I'd use that intro as I'm getting so close to seat. And last year I was lucky enough to do the ground announcing at AT&T Park, and I must admit, it was the most fun I've had with a microphone in hand. Calling the game over the PA system for Team Digital, Team CRM, and Team CIO, and for all the CRM listeners and Team CRM guys, just remember it was Team Digital that got the win in that tournament, and our days of gloating and bragging about that will come to an end at Seat Vegas, probably by the end of Seat Vegas. I think there's a few more jabs that we can get in there. My name is Sean Callanan. I'm the host of the Sports Geek Podcast. You may be listening to us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or my favorite podcast app, Pocket Casts. I'm recording this from Chicago. I flew into Chicago on July 4. I think my July 4 took a total of 36 hours. It was about a 26 hours door to hotel experience, Melbourne to Sydney, Sydney to LA, LA to Chicago. I didn't get much sleep on the flight, but I am now up and about in Chicago, looking forward to catching up with a few people while I'm here and attend Podcast Movement Conference. You can follow along on PM16 is the hashtag for Podcast Movement if you're interested in podcasting and podcasters. I'm really looking forward to connecting with some people that I both listen to and follow online, as well as while I'm in Chicago taking a few games. I'll be headed to the Cubs game later today and hopefully a White Sox game before I head off to Toronto. If you are listening, to this, and I'm probably going to, depending on how James goes with the edits, I will probably be out of Chicago by the time this gets published, but I will be visiting other cities in Northern America, both heading up to Toronto to catch up with some friends and do some stadium tours, hopefully catch a Blue Jays game, and then Denver before heading to Vegas and Seat. If you heard episode 120 with Jeremy Butler, I have got links, live links, to be able to book a time for a coffee, beer, catch-up podcast interview. I'm really flexible with what I can do in those spots. By some Calendly links. So simply go to calendly.com/Sean Callanan and then /the city that I'm in. If you're following me along on Twitter, you will know where I am. So that would be calendly.com/Sean Callanan/Toronto if you wanted to catch up when I'm in Toronto on the 10th, 11th, 12th, I think I'm there, or if I'm in Denver on the 13th or in Vegas from the 14th. Sounds like I'm pitching a comedian tour, really, doesn't it? But yeah, I'd love to catch up with any Sports Geek Podcast listeners over the next couple of weeks while I am in the US. For this podcast, I was good to catch up with Adam Groh from Core Software. This was set up by his boss, Russell Scabetti, a longtime CRM aficionado and good friend of mine who's been on the podcast a couple of times. And had this chat with Adam as part of the Seat sponsorship series. Core is one of the key sponsors for the Seat conference in Vegas. And so I had a chat with Adam about his work at the Utah Jazz. So similar to Russell in starting on team side and then moved across to the vendor side. And now he is helping teams on board with Core. And then also just with overall CRM strategies to get started. So it was a really good discussion on how he got started at Utah and then what he looks to do and what he looks to implement in those first couple of years around CRM. So here's my chat with Adam Groh from Core Software. Uh,
Very happy to welcome a friend of a friend from Core Software, Director of Customer Success, Adam Groh. Welcome to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me.
You were tapped on the shoulder by my good friend and the favourite of the podcast listeners, Russell Scabetti, your colleague at Core. You've been now at Core Software for 8 months, but prior to that, you were at the Utah Jazz. Is that where you got your start in sports?
Yeah, that was my first jump into the sports industry. Prior to that, I was in New York City as a brand strategist working on entertainment networks and kind of their branding strategy. So an analytics role, but more focused on the marketing end of things. And prior to that, I had a small business doing sports apparel, so kind of the sports industry, but not necessarily the same industry that I'm in now.
And so how did you get into the analytics space? Going from apparel into analytics?
So when I started in New York working for a company called MediaStorm as a brand strategist for them, it was a highly analytical role. I was a finance major in college and dabbled a little bit in some of the finance industry type jobs and really wasn't for me. So I ended up in kind of a more of a marketing analytics space, and that's where really the benefits of working in finance and understanding, you know, all the different things you can do with Excel and looking at things analytically really translated over into that career path for me. And then once I was done in New York, actually what happened was I was home in Salt Lake for a wedding and ran into the senior vice president of ticket sales and marketing for the Jazz, who's a family friend at a wedding, and they were looking for a business analyst to kind of report to him and the senior management, executive management group at the Jazz. And we kind of got to talking, and I went in and interviewed with him and the president of the Jazz at the time. And within 2 weeks, they made me an offer, and I moved back to Salt Lake, where I jumped into the sports industry head first.
And so was that real, they wanted someone to crunch the numbers and better understand some of the things they were doing? Was it mainly on the ticketing side of the business for the Jazz?
Yeah, it was kind of funny. They just knew they needed some help, and they needed to look at things a little differently. And really, the way Jim, my boss, put it was, we need someone to manage a lot of our business projects. So he said it could be anything from, you know, working on creative type stuff to a lot of analytics type stuff. And they didn't really know what the role was going to entail. And so I started, and a lot of it really started off just analytical type stuff. I helped them with a lot of pricing strategies within the first couple months. We started looking at their season ticket pricing and gaps in there, and we started doing a lot of analytics type stuff like that, and they sent me out to Boston to the NBA analytics conference within 6 months of working there, and I was the only person from the Jazz. And keep in mind, this was about 4 years ago, so there were some teams that were really starting to look into it, but you know, just between now and 4 years ago, this was still a relatively new space for the sports industry, as it still kind of is. And next thing I know, I'm sitting there back in Salt Lake after spending, you know, a day at the analytics workshop and then MIT Sloan Sports Conference networking and talking to teams. And I said, Jim and Randy, this is what we need to do. We need to create a strategy and analytics group. And from there, you know, we went out, we got a CRM system, which we implemented, which is where I got introduced to Core. You know, we ended up hiring, you know, by the end, we had a team that started really just with me as a business analyst.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's sort of the you know, the Moneyball story, the Billy Bean, and you know, made famous in the movie. The analytics on the field and on the court, whatever, or on the ice, whatever the sport is, got a lot of exposure. And that's, you know, one of the things that's a big focus at Sloan. But it's the business Moneyball that has had just as big a rise off the court in analyzing all the data, understanding what your fans are doing, understanding your pricing models and those kind of things, that's just exploded just as much on the business side of sports, hasn't it?
Yeah. They finally saw exactly what you're saying, where, hey, we're doing all this with player intelligence. Why aren't we doing this with our business intelligence? And to be honest, I'll tell you a funny story. I was blown away by kind of the operations that were going on in the sports industry when I started, because I was out working in New York, and, you know, I was working on strategic campaigns and brand initiatives for Comedy Central, MTV, FX, where these were multi-million dollar consulting budgets and stuff. And we were using state-of-the-art technology. So you come back to a sports team and you're like, okay, this is an NBA team. This is going to be awesome. Like, they're going to have all this cool stuff. And you get back and, you know, they were at the Jazz in particular, they were still submitting sales orders through paper forms. And so the reps would pile them up at the director's desk, go drop them off at the box office. Every team was different, right? And does this differently. But at the Jazz, they would then take these papers, pink slips, and they would drop them off at the box office and they would process them one by one by one by one. And if any got declined, they put them up on the door and you had to hope that the rep went and saw it. And that was just one small instance of how it, old school kind of the industry was. And I think it's a lot because due to the fact that in the sports industry, the business model has been awesome for so long. I mean, everybody just wants to come see sports. It's why you live in Salt Lake City, Utah. Why don't you want to come see the Jazz? There's, you know, not any other pro sports team around. So they haven't had to be really strategic in the way they operate. And slowly, I think executives and teams and owners have finally realized, hey, you know, this is a new era. We need to be a little bit smarter and definitely more strategic about how we're selling and all that stuff.
Yeah, I think it was Ray Wang last year at Seat on the panel that sort of said there's this public misconception of sports being these massive brands, which they are, but then thinking that the infrastructure behind them is the same, you know. So whether it's the Utah Jazz and Coca-Cola, both have massive brands, you know. Obviously Coca-Cola a little bit bigger, but when you go behind the scenes, the infrastructure that is behind those brands isn't exactly the same as, like you said, a Toyota or a Ford or an MTV or a Comedy Central. But I think that gap is decreasing. I think the tools, and I think the access to the tools is making building the proficiency of sports in that space to better understand their data and how they can better act on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, marketing, I think back in the day, wasn't driven as much by analytics as it was by creative and feel, and as much as that still is a part of sports, now I think data is finally kind of getting its time to shine, and really, you know, the creative's great, but really, you know, what's driving the people to buy, you know, it's not the creative at games, it's, you know, the team, what is it, and that the data will answer that question for you.
So take us through that. I guess that journey of you're at the Jazz. You're proving your worth in and analyzing the data. You know, even using the tool of the Trade Excel to just at least get some better analysis out of the data that you do have. What were the things that you did in making the step, choosing the provider in core, and then what did the team sort of evolve to and grow to as you rolled that project out?
Yeah, okay. Well, so it was the first things first was they said, okay, well, what's the steps to building this? And we realized, well, we needed to collect the data. And how do you collect this data? You know, you can do it through your online web stuff, right? Digitally, you can grab people that are coming to Facebook, social, do all that. But really, what we identified right off the bat, and I think most teams have, is, you know, your number one source for collecting data is your sales team, right? They're the ones that are talking and engaging with these fans. What can we learn about that? So obviously, that's why teams flock to CRM in the first place, is because they say, well, that's a tool for our sales team to go and collect data and build relationships that we can, you know, we can provide actual strategy against.
Yeah, exactly. The more that you can get from those people as you're talking to them and in those different touch points, it just builds a richer picture for that fan.
Exactly. And so we said, okay, well, let's start researching what's out there, right? And we said, okay, well, basically there's Salesforce and Microsoft Dynamics, and, you know, the Utah Jazz and Larry H. Moore Sports and Entertainment, at least at that time, and obviously a lot's changed in 4 years, is a kind of a conservative organization, even though I do admit a lot's changed since then. So we're looking at the pricing models against Dynamics versus Salesforce. And at the time, you know, Salesforce, we're looking at $100 per month per user over the next, you know, perpetually, versus we had a great IT team. We could just go buy the on-prem Dynamics solution, and we identified that as a one-time fee. Great. like, yes, it costs us more up front, but we don't have to worry about it again. And then we said, okay, well, what are we going to do with CRM? And we started talking to people, you know, around the industry, and I started networking. I talked to people like Chris Zeppenfeld at the Charlotte Hornets or Bobcats at the time, and just people around the industry who had that kind of name for themselves and been around. And really, we identified, you know, a company like Green Beacon, a company like Core. I think we talked to a couple other vendors at the time. I can't recall their names. And in the end, Core just stood out. And yeah, they were expensive, but they gave us what we needed to do. And that goes back to collecting the data against all of our different reps. And more so, we wanted to take the sponsorship to another level as well, which is kind of a new kind of peak that's just barely starting to evolve in the sports analytics industry, in my opinion. And Core offered the only product that really would help us get to that gap. So we went in, we signed with Core, and just started using their product. And the first year, you know, any CRM implementation, or really, I wouldn't even call it CRM, because I think we need to redefine what CRM really is. You know, people talk about CRM, but really it's your sales operations, your sales strategy.
Yeah, it's the process around it. It's not just the tool. It's not like you're just dropping in the tool going, everything's solved. It's like, no, we need to figure out how our staff and our process and how we do things work with the tool. It's not so much, you know, it's not a silver bullet.
Right. And what you're saying is it's a culture change. It's really what it is. And it's a really hard culture change, because you're talking about an industry that has been the same way for how many years, right? So you're changing the way people think and the way that they operate. And again, it's not, like you said, to your point, it's not just the CRM that you're coming in laying in. It's a new culture. It's a new process. It's new everything. So it's kind of interesting, and that's why I say, you know, you need to redefine CRM, because it's not really CRM anymore as much as it's this bigger strategy and this bigger picture.
And so did that, you know, it would, because it is a culture change as well, because you've got people who have done stuff in the same way, you know, for a long time, and now they're, you know, they've got to use a system, or... because their system, right. Their systems that previously worked, was there a little bit of change and shift in that and friction in that culture change and in rolling out the system overall?
Sorry, say that again.
So I guess the teething problems and getting people to use a new process. You know, people by nature don't like change. You know, how did that process go through? You know, sort of starting to get people to use it, starting to see some of those successes to go, oh, this is why, you know, this is why we're using this process, this is why the tool, and this is the benefits that it is providing. Was there a little bit of you know, a few teething problems in that space to get people to, you know, on board?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, who doesn't go through those teething problems? What I say to teams, I was just in California working with one of the professional sports teams out there for a week. That's kind of a lot of what I'm doing at Core, is going out and really taking my experiences from the Jazz and doing this at a big corporation where we had multiple properties and really trying to help teams and consult and advise on the best ways to ingrain it in their organization. And what I tell teams is that first year is going to be painful. I don't know anybody who does it, the switch and changes their culture in the first year, goes smoothly. It's a pain. And then the second year you start seeing the benefits. But what happens in year two is you start refining some of the processes. You're like, oh, we should have done this better and differently in year one. And I say year three is kind of you're starting to hit the flat ground and you're really starting to make some progress. So I say that to teams, and at the Jazz, that was a perfect example. That's exactly what we went through. And I'll talk about ticketing first off. We could go either route with ticketing or sponsorship, but I think this will be really relevant for ticketing, because the first year was horrible. We had fields showing up all over that weren't relevant to where they were in the conversation. And as you know, we grew the team and we started asking questions, and then working with our partners at Core, what we were able to do is start saying, okay, well, what's important? What do we need to learn first and foremost? And it was just little things, just being able to understand, you know, why they were buying or why they were losing. While I was at the Jazz, we were pretty horrible. But over the 2 years, we collected everybody who said team performance is why they weren't buying. And right before I left this season, now with Gobert and Exum and Hayward, we launched a campaign where we went and grabbed all of those people. And, you know, we went ahead and dropped them into a campaign. And you know, when I left, we were seeing some really good conversations happening, and that was because in year two, 4 years ago, we said, okay, we get what it is now in year one. Now here's what we need to do in year two to really define that and get where we needed to go. And then you just kind of evolve year after year after year. And by the end, we had really earned trust with our reps in my group, the strategy and analytics group, where the reps and really their directors all the way up to the VP level on the ticketing side trusted us to do our job and knew we were doing it really well. So at one point during year two, more towards the end, we said, okay, we really need to redefine reps pipelines. Like what's happening is we were going in, we were finally starting to score leads and finding these valuable nuggets of gold in our databases or coming in through online. And the problem was is that we couldn't call them because of rules that were in our sales process, meaning they were probably in a reps pipeline overdue by 6 months. And so we couldn't really distribute them. So working with the VP and the ticketing group, what we did is we got every rep caught up on their calls. And what we said is like, look, just stay caught up on your calls and focus on the good calls and get rid of the bad leads. And when they come back, whether through online or a survey or they're at the game and they fill out, you know, an enter to win and their name pops up again and they're interested, we'll make sure you get it back again. And it was a little bit of a battle because reps are, I think historically in this industry, reps are saying, no, these are my leads. I have an open call, you know, but they have way too many calls to manage and it clogs up their pipeline. And instead what we did is we said, look, get rid of the bad. We'll give them back if they come through, but use your pipeline and your to-do list like you're organizing yourself, not that you're protecting yourself. So it's a little bit of a change in mentality, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's definitely a trust thing because it's your reps are sitting there going, like, you know, they are protective of their leads. So, you know, giving them up, thinking that they're going to end up with someone else, it is a bit of a trust thing between the two departments.
Right, exactly. And you know how reps can be. They can be, it can almost be war between reps. I mean, I've seen some pretty cutthroat things happen where, you know, and that's the nature of the sales world. They're all trying to make their nut off of the money they make, the sales they make. But what they realize is by just kind of letting us do our jobs, they were actually going to make more money and have less stress because we were going to come in and manage that. And that's really the ultimate goal of these types of departments, right? Your strategy and analytics group or your CRM or whatever you call it, is that's their job, right? You have these people who are great at going in and looking at data and coming up with insights and organizing it in a way. And what's a sales rep's job to do? To go call somebody and have a conversation and convert them to a sell. So our philosophy was let's free up the reps to do that, right? Instead of having them kind of mine through the database and take a wild guess if this guy is a good person to call or if this guy's a good person to call. And keep calling that person when that person really isn't a good lead. Let's let them do what they do best, and that's take leads and convert them to sales and customers while we can go out and identify those potential customers and help manage it better.
And it's really for you, you see it as your department and, you know, the department of the CRM and the strategy analytics guys to really develop that healthy pipeline it's not about thinking about what they're going to do. They should just be picking up the next lead off the list because you're always providing with that pipeline. Whereas if they're the one, you know, if they're the one managing it, it's not really what they should be doing. They should be on the call making the sale and let the data guys maintain that pipeline for them.
Right, exactly. And then, like you said, and then not only are we earning trust with the salespeople and giving them better leads, but then what it's doing is making the organization smarter. We're finding out why people are buying, you know, that type of data that then goes back and makes us smarter as people. One thing that I worked on with, you know, the management group in ticketing was we had a continuous debate about, you know, within our lower bowl, how many of our season ticket holders are buying for business purposes versus personal fan base purposes, especially with the NBA and how ticket prices are continually growing in a market like Salt Lake. Unfortunately, a single family has a really hard time affording lower bowl tickets anymore. And so we wanted to really understand why and how. And what was interesting is, you know, 1 year we went in and as people renewed, we asked them that question. We said, why do you buy tickets? And people that we historically thought were fans and whatever, they were identifying as businesses, even though, yes, probably secondary or even more motivating, they were buying as a fan, they were identifying under their business, right, for all the purposes that come with buying tickets, entertaining clients, aka tax write-offs, that type of stuff for the business, a business expense, which is very viable. so what we then did is we said, okay, well, now what we need to do is we need to find more business owners to go out and pitch lower bowl season tickets to. So when we started going out and buying business lead lists and who the you know, head of marketing was there, head of HR, the owners, and we'd invite them to events. We'd use tickets, extra ticket inventory at games that we weren't pushing or able to sell. We'd bring them and host them, and we changed our sales pitch as a sales group from, hey, come by, you're a Jazz fan, we can get you the lowest seats possible, to, hey, you should come by, it's a great experience for your business, you can use it as a write-off, you can entertain clients, you can reward employees, bing, bang, boom, all these different points. So just a good example of how we use the data 1 year to change our sales strategy in a future year.
Yep. So looking at your role now, like you said, at Core, helping clients on board, getting their strategies in place, how do you go about focusing? Like when you start this kind of project, it's like, yes, we're gonna roll out, we're gonna set up everything for our systems. There's a bit of it must be tough in what is the focus? You know, are we tackling single game tickets? Are we what's our group ticket strategy? How are we looking at season tickets, either attraction or renewal? How do you go about trying to get some focus? Do you try to tackle them one at a time, all at a time? Because they've got to be different strategies for all of those different type of outcomes from a CRM point of view. How do you not overwhelm a new client that you're potentially rolling out with, going, well, here's all the things that you need to do, because if you lay out the whole game plan, it can be quite overwhelming. What are the first steps when engaging a new client to say, well, what do we want to do? Is there any low hanging fruit, if you want to use that phrase, that you start to tackle first?
Right. Yeah. I mean, first off, every organization is different, and you really have to understand the culture within each organization before you can start to come up with a game plan. And that's why Russell and the owners of Core came up with this customer success group, is really consult and advise, put in individuals from the industry. So myself, we have someone from the Yankees, the Rangers, various sports teams who now can come in and speak to this type of stuff, and not only say, hey, we're from a software company, we're going to tell you how to use our product, but hey, we're from a sports team, and we can tell you how to utilize not only this product, but better your actual business processes in your organization. And really, it doesn't, in my opinion, you have to tackle them all at the same time, and you have to build some culture, because if you start, let alone siloing ticketing and sponsorship, but even more micro, ticketing, so group sales is operating differently than the season ticket retention to the inside sales group, and they're all operating differently, even though they're all selling different tickets, you're going to get a lot of discombobulation and a lot of poor data. So you have to say, okay, everybody needs to operate this way, and this is what we're trying to achieve, and then you can start branching out into looking at how you're going to distribute campaigns differently or collect different data from different groups. But in the end, when you boil it down to the foundation, the processes are still the same, and now you've unified the culture within that sales group, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. So it is a bit like you were saying before, not to say, you're going to have the pain in year one, but because you're rolling out a vanilla style product where you're trying to serve all of those purposes, but then once you've rolled that out, and then month one, month two, month three, you start realizing the pieces that the single game ticket people need, or the group ticket people need, or the sponsorship people need, that those customizations can start happening, but it's very hard to predict what they are early on. So it's a matter of rolling it all out, start using it, and listening for those pain points to say, yeah, that's where we need to pull that lever and change the process in that spot to start learning more as you're going. That's sort of the process.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of hit the nail on the head there, where you're like, just start using it. I mean, really, you just need to do one thing right off the bat across all your groups, whether you're renewing season tickets or you're closing group sales or whatever. And that's just get all your opportunities to a win or a loss. Again, I was going back to working with this California pro team the other week. Their reps, there was no incentive for the reps to get those marked as a one or get them marked as a loss. So the way they were monitoring it was they were just saying, did you make one call against this lead? But they weren't saying, hey, what happened with that lead, right? And the thing is, you can still report revenue out of the ticketing system, but what you can't report is where all those dollars came from, what campaign, why did they buy, that type of stuff, right? Which is why on the ticketing website, you invest in the CRM. And so going back to what you're saying is that first initial step is just having an objective goal as hitting everything to win, hitting everything to loss, and managing the pipeline in that sort of manner. Because once you start doing that, then you can start managing all the places in between that first call and that win or the loss. So right there alone, that's just a strategy that any group with as many departments as you have can implement, right?
Oh, I mean, it is the classic, you know, if you're not tracking something, you can't see the success of it. So just, you know, just the, it's literally, you know, you're literally saying the crossing off of every call and what was it, a win or a loss? And at least then both from a, at a rep level and then at a department level, you're getting some metrics that are valuable to you.
Right, exactly. And so until everybody's doing that same thing, there's really no data to be acted upon or no real organizational structure to give you what you need. So again, that's again just the changing of a culture and really building out a new way to do business.
And so how are you finding, speaking to Russell, when he made the leap from team side to vendor side, similar to you, was using Core and now works for Core. How have you found moving from the team-based role and, you know, working in the day-to-day in the trenches at the Jazz to that consulting role and serving many partners and working with many different teams? How have you found the role at Core so far?
Oh, there's the good and the bad, you know. I mean, for the most part, it's great. I get to fly around the country, and I get to work with teams, and I'm lucky. I landed an awesome role. I get to help teams strategize on the way they're going to do business and look at their rate cards and look at their pricing and advise on that and help them change for the better. At least that I firmly believe that, or else I wouldn't be doing that. And I think they find a lot of value in what we're offering now with this success department. And so that's great. I'm not only am I teaching, but I'm learning a ton every single day. That being said, you know, the negative and the con to this job is I go in and I help teams with these strategies and then I get on a plane 2 days later and I take off and sure they keep me updated and we do weekly calls and we catch up and I probably come back a few months later, but I'm not part of actually the final part of it, the actionable execution of it and watching it come. And with that also that what's next, right? Yes, I may have that conversation, but I don't get to be in the trench focused on this organization and seeing it through day to day. That's probably the one thing that I miss the most. And obviously working at a team is a fun atmosphere. So is Core, but you know, the game nights and being at the games and just the working with the sales teams every day. So there's the good and the bad, but obviously I love what I'm doing right now because I get a work with teams still and I keep learning every day. So.
And that's I think that's the advantage, I guess, being on the vendor side and being able to, you know, myself being able to work with multiple teams is to see what successes are happening, whether it is in the same sport, whether it's a basketball to basketball point of view, or in different sports, and what's working, and seeing if those tweaks or tactics or techniques will work across different segments, whether they be geographical. You know, what if something that works for the Yankees, will it work, you know, in the Utah market? Those kind of things. I think that's where there's a real that's where, for me, that's where the buzz is, seeing if you can get things to work across multiple areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the coolest things that I've been able to see on the vendor side is I've gotten a lot more exposure to other leagues. I would consider myself, you know, I knew a lot about the NBA and I still do. But, you know, I've now learned quite a bit about the NFL, the MLS, the NHL, and how they operate differently and how they think differently and really what drives them as a league and organizations within that league. Definitely a perk of the vendor side that, you know, you get. So like we both said, you know, the good and the bad of it all, and it's cool to see all that.
Well, terrific. I will catch you at SEAT in Las Vegas. Make sure if you are listening, send Adam a tweet, the Adam Grow. Send him a tweet telling him you've listened. If you're going to catch up at SEAT in Las Vegas, please let him know. I'm looking forward to it. I just want to finish up with my Sports Geek 5 questions to finish up the interview. What do you remember? What was the first sports event you ever attended?
I don't remember the first sports event that I ever attended, but I can tell you that it was a Utah Jazz game at the old Salt Palace back in, had to be the late 80s when I was a little kid, or the early 90s, right before they moved to the Delta Center. That was my first event. So.
It would have been a Stockton Malone pick and roll. You would have seen a few of those in your time.
I've seen more than a few of those in my time, definitely.
And now that you are attending more different, more stadiums and more events, what would be your favorite food you've ever consumed at a sports event?
Favorite food? I had the mac and I had the privilege to go to a Packers Bears Monday Night Football game at Lambeau. Which, if anybody has the chance to go to Lambeau, they need to go to. It's just a rare experience. And I would say that my favorite food there that I had came from there, and it was their mac and cheese up there. They have like a bacon jalapeno mac and cheese, which is awesome.
Well, you would expect as much at in Green Bay. They do love their cheese. And the first app you open in the morning.
Probably my email.
Yep, probably.
I open up my email and see what I got to catch up on first thing when I get in. You know, the one thing about working at Core is everybody goes all hours of the day, all hours of the night, whether it's a team or a coworker. So you're bound to wake up to a few emails that you got to address first thing in the morning.
Exactly. And is there someone that you think Sports Geek Podcast listeners should follow or read or keep an eye on? I'm not going to prompt you. Yeah, it didn't take much prompting. Of course, you should be following. And I'm sure everyone is already following Russell Scabetti. He's a big contributor to sports.
Not because he's my boss, but because you should.
Yeah, this was not paid and endorsed by Russell Scabetti. I'll just put it out there for Adam.
I did not get a free half day on Friday for saying that.
And what's your social media platform MVP, if you were to pick one?
I'm going to sound like a 20-year-old here, but Snapchat right now.
I'm with you. I think it's definitely an up and comer in the space, and it's definitely a unique way to watch the world of sports. So.
And personally for me, you know, I'm on the road a lot. My family's back in Salt Lake. You know, it's a good way for me to keep in touch with people and show them where I'm at. So it's a lot of fun to kind of do that. So, you know, I'm always taking pictures and have the different venues I'm at and stuff. You know, working on site with all these teams, you get to see a lot of cool behind the scenes stuff. So it's fun for my family and friends to see that.
Terrific. All right. Well, looking forward to catching up in Las Vegas at SEAT, and I'll see you then.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to it. Safe travels.
Sign up for Sports Geek News at sportsgeekhq.com/signup now.
Thanks again to Adam Groh. You can send him a tweet at the Adam Groh. Tell him that you listen to the podcast or catch up with him, as he mentioned, in SEAT or at SEAT in Vegas. If you want to chat about CRM strategies, how to get started, what to look for, some of those key elements, because it really is a matter of using the tools, but then it's the implementation of those tools and the strategies around that are absolutely vital. I think it was my chat with Fiona Green, who I will see at SEAT, where it's not about the tool. And it's funny, after doing a podcast with Core Software, it provides a terrific tool. It is a lot of the secret sauce is in the implementation. I think that's the spot that the guys at Core do really, really well. I was lucky enough to catch up with Russell Scabetti when he visited my hometown in Melbourne for a conference. And then we spent Saturday together taking in some AFL. Luckily enough, he was able to extend his stay an extra day, and we went to the MCG to see Collingwood versus Carlton. It wasn't the greatest of spectacles, but it was great to to get him to see the game live. It's really something that TV does not do it justice, and also it's always great to catch up with Russell to talk CRM. So catch up with Adam, and also catch up with Core Software, who are our title sponsor at SEAT Vegas. Last thing before I wrap up this podcast, I just have to give absolute thanks to everybody who is in the sports business Slack community that we've set up. Been talking to a few people about in the podcasting community about how they engage their community. And some of them use Facebook groups, which I had. I had a Facebook group for the Sports Geek podcast, which was intermittently active. But one thing I did, and I think it's one of the best decisions I've made, is last December sort of said, hey, who wants to test out Slack and see how they can connect and sort of be a bit collaborative in what we're looking at and sharing. And so out of that, I set up Sports Biz Slack. You can join. If you haven't joined up, go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. And if you haven't used Slack before, it's a really good way for you to test it out. I'm advising all of my clients and people who are setting up digital teams or trying to improve the communications between their digital teams to use Slack. So it's really good. But yeah, there's in real life channels where people are connecting online and then making that connection offline. So it was really great to see some people in New York organize some meetups. We've got a specific channel, private channel for SEAT conference. Please send me a message on the Slack if you are not added to that and you are attending SEAT. I've no doubt we will have a impromptu Sports Biz Slack meetup because there is a bunch of people who will be attending SEAT in there. And yeah, some great articles being shared and implementations, whether it's Manchester City profiling their new website, or people just highlighting different campaigns or articles around ticketing and the like. So if you're in the digital space, you're in ticketing, stadium technology, we're trying to cater for everybody, and that's a good thing about Slack. You can opt into different channels. So if you have joined up, thank you very much. I'm so appreciative of the feedback that I'm getting. It's all about the greater, what is it, the team is greater than some of the parts. I've completely butchered that, but that's what the community is. It's not about me, it's about you. And if you haven't joined up, please do. I'm getting a lot of value out of it from the interactions that I'm getting, and I hope you are as well. So that wraps things up. My name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek. As I said, while I'm in the US, please stay tuned to my Snapchat and send me some details of if we can catch up, and you know, use those Calendly links if you want to actually catch up in any of the cities that I will be in. But for everyone else who is listening who will be at SEAT, I will see you in Vegas. Looking forward to it. Until next episode, or until we meet in person. And don't forget my offer from episode 120. Of free beer. All you have to do is when you see me, all you have to do is say, like your new Sports Geek shoes. That has to be your opening line. This is my own test, engagement test. It's my own are people listening test. That's what you have to open with. Anyone who opens with that line in when they meet me will get a free beer. And I'm quite happy to shout the whole bar because my main drive for continuing to do the podcast is the feedback that I'm getting. So that really does mean a lot to me. By doing that, I will know that you're a listener. So check out the new Nike ID Sports Geek shoes. I will be sending a few more tweets on the Sports Geek Shoes Twitter account. And it does get a few more mentions when I'm on stage than I do at times. So yes, I look forward to meeting with you either in Chicago in the past week after this one gets published, or in Toronto, Denver, or Las Vegas. Until then, my name is Sean Callanan from Sports Geek, and you've been listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.
Like the Sports Geek Podcast? Find us on facebook.com/sportsgeek. Check out which teams work with Sports Geek at sportsgeekhq.com/clients. Please leave a review on iTunes. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes. Thanks for listening to the Sports Geek Podcast.